Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 6. And this morning we are going to do texts 42, 43, and 44. I'm going to chant the Sanskrit to 42 and 43 myself, and I'll read the translations. 43 has a short purport, which I'll read, and then 44 we'll chant together, and I'll read the purport. Okay, so I'll start off. Te tatra vanitam gopai putana gama gamanadikam shudvatan nidanam svasti sisos chasan suvishmita. Translation. When the inhabitants of Braj, who had come from from distant places, heard the whole story of how Putana had come and then been killed by Krishna, they were certainly astonished. And they offered their blessings to the child for his wonderful deed of killing Putana. Nanda Maharaj, of course, was very much obliged to Vasudev, who had foreseen the incident, and simply thanked him, thinking how wonderful Vasudev was. Nandaswa Putanam Adaya Prachagatam Udadadi Mordnya. Mord yupagraya paramam mudam lebe kurudvaha. O Maharaj Prickett, best of the Kurus, Nanda Maharaj was very liberal and simple. He immediately took his son Krishna on his lap, as if Krishna had returned from death, and by formally smelling his son's head, Nanda Maharaj undoubtedly enjoyed transcendental bliss. Purport. Nanda Maharaj could not understand how the inhabitants of his house had allowed Putana to enter the house, nor could he imagine the gravity of the situation. He did not understand that Krishna had wanted to kill Putana and that his pastimes were performed by Yogamaya. Nanda Maharaj simply thought that someone had entered his house and created havoc. This was Nanda Maharaj's simplicity. And we'll chant 44 together. Ya etat Putana moksham. Ya etat putana moksham. Krishnasyarbakam adbutam. Krishnasyarbakam adbutam. Shrinuyachradaya martyo. Shrinuyachradaya martyo. Govinde labhate ratim. Govinde labhate ratim. Ya etat putana moksham. Krishnasyarbakam adbhutam. Shrinuyachstradaya marcho. Govinde labhate ratim.
Yeah.
Vaishnavis. Okay, ladies.
Try that.
Okay. Moksham. Okay. Anyone who? Etat. This. Putana moksham. Salvation of Putana. Krishnasya. Of Krishna. Arbakam. The childhood pastimes. Adbhutam. Wonderful. Shrinuyat. Should hear. Shalaya. With faith and devotion. Marcha. Any person within this material world. Govinde. For the Supreme Person, Govinda. Adipurush. Labate. Gains. Ratim. Attachment. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Any person who hears with faith and devotion about how Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, killed Putana, and who thus invests his hearing in such childhood pastimes of Krishna, certainly attains attachment for Govinda, the Supreme, Original Person. Purport. The incident in which the great witch attempted to kill the child but was killed herself is certainly wonderful. Therefore, this verse uses the word adbhutam, meaning specifically wonderful. Krishna has left us with many wonderful narrations about him. Simply by reading these narrations, as they are described in Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one gains salvation from this material world and gradually develops attachment to and devotion for Govinda, Adipurusha. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 10th canto, 6th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Killing of the Demon Putana. Chakshuna Militamina Tasmai Sri Gudavena Maha Sri Chaitanya Manovishtam Sapitamina Bhutale Swayamupakadamayam Dadati Swaparantika. So I'll start off by explaining what just happened. The women in the temple are so humble that when they're addressed as Vaishnavis, they didn't respond because they're thinking, I'm not a Vaishnav. That's what it was. Okay. All right. So anyway, we'd like to thank everybody for coming to Srimad Bhagavatam class this morning, those who are hearing on the internet, and particularly those who showed up in person. It's very encouraging. And I hope I could say something about these nice, wonderful, beautiful verses that we're reading that's worthwhile and will encourage everybody in their devotional service. Okay, so we're going to start with 43. So I'll read it again. O Maharaj Pickett, best of the crews. Nanda Maharaj was very liberal and simple. He immediately took his son Krishna on his lap as if Krishna had returned from death. And by formally smelling his son's head, Nanda Maharaj undoubtedly enjoyed transcendental bliss. Purport. Nanda Maharaj could understand. We read the purport. Okay, so it's pointed out here. Prabhupada says right at the end, this is Nanda Maharaj was, he said that was Nanda Maharaj's simplicity. In other words, what's happened here is Nanda Maharaj wasn't actually there in person when this was all happening. If you remember, he went to Mathura to pay the taxes. And when he was there, he met Vasudev. And Vasudev, you know, they had an exchange there. And part of the exchange was Vasudev. They said, he inquired, so have you already paid the taxes? He said, yeah, everything's done. It's all taken care of. He said, well, you know, it might be a good idea for you to go back, not lollygag around, just, you know, head back pretty quickly because there could be some disturbances, you know, back there. I think there's going to be some disturbances. So Nanda Maharaj was a Vaishya, Vasudev was a Kshatriya, and Nanda Maharaj kind of like, you know, he looked up apparently get the impression that he looked up to Vasudeva. This is okay, probably it's good advice, I should do that. So they headed back. You know, he was with the other cowherd men, and they headed back. Meantime, not back at the ranch, but back at the Vrindavan there, the rest of the community was there, and they were taking care of baby Krishna. And Mother Yasoda was, you know, nursing her child, taking care of Krishna properly. And this Putna came. You know, she wandered in there, and of course she was a servant of Kamsa. She was not, I don't even know if she was really a she. We don't know what, I mean, I can't remember clearly if it said who, what she was, but she was definitely a demon. And I think she was a she because when she, it's, I think it's explained someplace that when Krishna killed her, she assumed her original form, which was a huge Rakshasi. It doesn't say Rakshasa, right? It says huge Rakshasi. So let's say, for argument's sake, she was a she. But she had this, you know, mystic powers, and she could she transformed herself into a very beautiful woman. And that's, as we all know, you know, we've heard, that's how she was able to enter into the village. And nobody suspected that she had any nefarious motives. Everybody thought, okay, here's this nice, they thought it was the goddess of fortune, actually. I think that's even stated there. They thought it was the goddess of fortune coming, you know. And they thought, well, okay, wonderful, sure, let her, of course, let her go nurse the child, like that. So, you know, and then we all know what happened. So, meantime, so that, you know, Krishna, the pastime unfolds, and Nanda Maharaj is arriving on the scene. Putin has already been killed. By the time he gets there, Putin is killed. Krishna had already been playing on his lap. He's been recovered. And now that I think they're in the process of chopping up the body and burning it in the fire. So, and his thing is, he's coming back to this, and he's, as it says here, he didn't understand. He could not understand how the inhabitants of the house had allowed Putin to enter the house, nor could he imagine the gravity of the situation. So in other words, I think his understanding was something like this, that he's coming home, and he didn't realize that this personality that was lying there, this huge, gigantic ogress, or whatever you want to call her, that was being chopped up and parts of the body were being burnt, was actually a demon that came with the intention to kill Krishna. He didn't understand that. He didn't understand that Krishna knew that, and that he didn't understand that Krishna was his son, was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that Krishna was aware of that and was cool with that and wanted to have that happen so he could kill that demon. He just was, you know, very as it's, simple doesn't mean it wasn't a simpleton. Simple means, actually, I looked up the dictionary definition, Prabhupada's definition of simplicity, means that without diplomacy, one should be so straightforward that he can disclose the real truth even to an enemy. Straightforward. So that was Nanda Maharaj's nature. He was simple, pure-hearted, very pure-hearted person, and because he was a pure-hearted person, he didn't, he just thought in terms, well, you know, Prabhupada explains this elsewhere, that people tend to see other people according to the kind of person they are. You know, there's that expression, Atmavan Manyate Jagat. From the fifth canto, Prabhupada explains what that is. It says, according to the logic of Atmavan Manyate Jagat, everyone thinks of others according to his own position. Archer, to signal me to slow down. But he's one of the fastest talkers, too, but I will try to take that advice. So everyone thinks of others according to his own position. So Nanda Maharaj was a very pure-hearted, straightforward, you know, honest kind of person. And it just, he didn't, because he was like that, it just didn't occur to him that there was this whole plot here, you know, with Kamsa behind it to kill his son. He just took it at face value. He just took... Anyway, what's going on here? As Prabhupada says here, his reaction was that someone had created, entered his house and created havoc. Because he didn't think it was a whole diabolical plot or scheme behind the whole thing. So, once again, to return to this point, Prabhupada says that was Nanda Maharaj's simplicity. But we should be very clear to understand that simplicity doesn't mean you're a simpleton. A simpleton is somebody who's less intelligent. If you call somebody a simpleton, that's an insult, right? But if you call somebody simple, that's not an insult. Nanda Maharaj was simple, but, and generally a simpleton is somebody who's less intelligent, but somebody is who's simple is not necessarily less intelligent. In the case of Nanda Maharaj here, Nanda Maharaj, yes, he was simple in the sense that he was not duplicitous, he was straightforward, he was clean, he was pure-hearted, like that, but he was highly intelligent. Actually, he's among the most intelligent. You know, we'll analyze, we'll just say something about the intelligence of Nanda Maharaj. Nanda Maharaj, you have to understand it, Nanda Maharaj is in the Vatsalya Rasa. You know, neutrality, Santaras, Dasharas, Sakyaras, Vatsalyaras, and Madhuryaras. And he's in the Vatsalyaras purely. He's a pure Vatsalyaras Bhakta. Okay? And he's not just in the Vatsalyaras from a distance. He's actually the unique single personality who's getting to interact with Krishna as his father. I mean, he's amazingly, you know, fortunate. So his intelligence is way beyond. I mean, you know, it's just said, it's being presented here. He was a simple man. But we should understand that his intelligence goes way beyond the karmis, way beyond the gyanis, way beyond the yogis. His intelligence is even way beyond bhaktas on other levels. Like, you know, just this morning, we're singing in that song, the Dhanadharastika song, Satyavrata Muni is praying, or he says, those super excellent pastimes of Lord Krishna's baby who drowned the inhabitants of Gokul and pools of ecstasy, to the devotees who are attracted only to his majestic aspect of Narayan and Vaikuntha, the Lord herein reveals. See, so in other words, there's devotees who are attracted to Lord Narayan's majestic aspect in Vaikuntha. And that's pretty exalted. I mean, those devotees are way beyond the gyanis, way beyond the yogis, etc. But Nanda Maharaj's position is way beyond that. He's beyond being attracted by the majestic aspect of Narayan and Vaikuntha, which is pretty darn good. If you can get yourself to that level where you're attracted to the majestic aspect in Narayan and Vaikuntha, you've done pretty well for yourself. You know, you've done pretty good. But he's way beyond that. He's way beyond that. He's been, because of his sincerity, because of his high intelligence, he's been admitted into the innermost circles of relationship with Krishna. He's being allowed to interact with Krishna in the most confidential, intimate way. Just to give an analogy, crude analogy, okay? Let's say you wanted to, if you want to work in the White House, you know, before you could work in the White House, even as a janitor, even as somebody just cleaning the bathrooms or something like that, you have to go through all sorts of screening. You know, there's all sorts of interviews. They do background checks. You have to get what's called red badge clearance. It's like a high security clearance, even to work as a janitor in the White House. What to speak of, like somebody who's actually doing something where they're interacting with the president. Okay? So, but, you know, once you get in, say once you pass all those things, you can get all those clearances and like that, then, and your job is to whatever, you know, some sort of security, whatever, you know. Then you get to interact with the president. It's not that, you know, he's a person. So it's not that at every second necessarily it's going to be really formal, you know. Like, I remember, probably it was about, I don't know, maybe 5 years ago, I was looking at some magazine or something like that. Anyways, there was an article about how Barack Obama plays basketball. There's a basketball court in the White House. And he plays basketball, and the people he plays basketball with are the other guys that work there. So, you know, every whatever it is, Wednesday afternoon, they get together and they play basketball in the White House. And, you know, in the article, it was talking about how this one was razzing, you know, one of the fellows who works there was razzing Barack Obama, how he blocked that shot when he was going up, and, you know, somebody, and he was saying, yeah, but I stole the ball when you were dribbling. And so, you know, it's not awe and reverence. It's, you know, it starts off like that, you know, and they have to be really on the best behavior to get the job in the first place, and then it starts. But as they associate with them and, you know, start interacting with them in different ways, that awe and reverence kind of fades into the background. I'm sure they're always in the back of their head, they're always aware that, I mean, this is the president of the United States I'm playing basketball with, you know, this is my position, this is his position. But that kind of fades, you know, that has to fade into the background in order for them to actually get in there and enjoy the game, You know? They can't just be thinking, well, I can't block his shot. He's the president of the United States. No, he's got, you know. So it's kind of like that. It's kind of like that. You know, Nanda Maharaj, he's passed all the, the tests and everything. That's way back. You know, he's in a situation now where he's interacting with Krishna as his father. And in order for that to facilitate that, Krishna doesn't even allow him to be aware, you know, for the most part. Krishna doesn't even allow him to be aware that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because it would interfere. It would interfere with that, you know, with that rasa, with that loving relationship. So he's forgetful of that. You know, he's forgetful of that. Although sometimes he can kind of, you know, it pops in, and he can, when he has to remember it, he'll remember it. But for the most part, it's just kind of, just like in that example I just gave, you know, when like if all of a sudden, you know, the United States got attacked by China or something like that, all these guys in the White House that were just relating to Barack Obama in a, like a buddy-buddy way, it would all become formal again, you know, because they had to, all of a sudden, some important stuff had to be dealt with. So it's kind of like that, you know, with Nanda Maharaj and the other inhabitants of Vrindavan. When it's required, all of a sudden he knows what's what. But for the most part, you know, for the daily activities, it's, you know, that he forgets, and he's just able to think of Krishna as his adorable child, you know. And this is Krishna's mercy also. This is Krishna's mercy on the inhabitants of Vrindavan and on devotees when they get to this level, because, you know, well, getting back to this phrase here, his majestic aspect in Narayan, the majestic aspect of Narayan and Vaikuntha. You know, say you have a king, you know, you can appreciate a king in a certain way. Like, you know, I might like Barack Obama, let's say. Let's use that example again, okay? Because I hear that he's a cool guy and he does this. It can go so far, you know, and it's like that the affection you could have for like some, like a majestic person, it's like an awe and reverence, and it goes so far, and it's good, but it has its limits. But you can have, but if somebody's an adorable child, you know, that you're able to have more. It's just, you know, that love and affection, and it's able to go deeper and further. So that's Krishna's mercy. Krishna actually, he assumes these different situations. He assumes this, these pastimes, right? These are what's called pastimes. It's Krishna's deliberately, you know, arranging things to help, to allow the devotees to enter into more confidential, intimate relationships with him. Actually, in this next purport here, Prabhupada touches upon that. He says here, Krishna has left many wonderful narrations about him. See, he does it deliberately. It's not an accident. It's Krishna's doing this deliberately. Krishna's coming to the material world, and he's performing all these different pastimes deliberately. It's just so we could So simply by reading these narrations as they're described in the Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one gains salvation from this material world and gradually develops attachment to and devotion for Govinda, Adipurusha. So the idea is this, that once again, we'll use an analogy. Imagine if you were like, not you, well, devotees don't think, you know, imagine if there were some felons, you know, serious criminals, and they were in high security prison. But, you know, they're in there for rape and manslaughter and, you know, all the bad stuff, the heavy, big stuff. And then you found out that all they had to do to get released was just to hear about the activities of Barack Obama when he happened to visit that prison. Would you say that was a pretty good deal or not? You'd say, well, that's an incredible deal. I mean, you know, it's being too merciful. That's being too merciful. I mean, all they got to do is hear about Barack Obama's activities when he came to visit the prison, and then they get out. That's like being too lenient. But that's what Krishna's doing. That's what Krishna's doing. You see, Krishna doesn't have to come here. He doesn't have to come at all, right? Krishna doesn't have to come into the material world. But he comes to the material world not for any benefit of himself. You know, he has nothing to be gained by coming to the material for Krishna. He's coming out of his cause. That's what it means. He's coming out of his causeless mercy. It's just causeless mercy. And when he comes out of his causeless mercy, he performs all these activities so that just by us hearing about them, as Prabhupada says here, we gain salvation from this material world and gradually develop attachment to and devotion for Govinda. In other words, we develop our love for Krishna. We, you know, make progress. We move towards becoming like Ananda Maharaj or Mother Yasoda in the sense that we, you know, reawaken our dormant love for Krishna. So that's, yeah, that's Krishna's mercy. It's his causeless mercy. He's trying to lower the bar as much as he possibly can. He's not even saying, I'm going to come here and you have to, only the people who directly participate in these pastimes with me, they're the ones that are going to get the benefit. No. Just by hearing about them, you don't even have to participate in them. Just if, you know, thousands of years later, anybody who hears these pastimes, they get the benefit. So, and this is Krishna's mercy, and it's also Prabhupada's mercy, that Prabhupada has given us these. Prabhupada, just to give you, you know, because the purport kind of touches, really lends for this, what I'm about to say, Prabhupada says, simply by reading these narrations, as they are described in Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one gains salvation from this material world, da-da-da-da-da. Okay, so, just so you know, most devotees will know, but some devotees may not know, that Prabhupada was very methodically working on his books, you know, and starting in 65, 66. But around 1969, 1970, Prabhupada thought to himself, and he kind of reveals this, you know, and I think in writing, or at least I've heard him speak, that he wasn't sure. He wasn't sure. He wasn't confident that he was going to live long enough to finish the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada couldn't bear the thought. Couldn't stand the thought that I'll go before I'm giving my disciples, my followers, the Krishna's pastimes. Because I might not get that far. I might not live long enough to go give them the 10th canto. So I got to do something about this. And he did. He did. Krishna. He gave us Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada stopped what he was doing, right? He stopped what he was doing. He stopped work on whatever he was working on at that point, and he decided, I'm going to produce a summary study of the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And that's Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada himself, actually, Prabhupada loved it. He produced it. He loved the Krishna book. He used to have the devotees read the Krishna book to him out loud. Right here in Nudeswaka, right? Right here in Nudeswaka, right? And if you go in the other side of the temple, there's the Prabhupada's garden. Prabhupada used to sit there in the evening, and devotees would read to him. And just like, you know, I mean, one thing, he would even elaborate upon it further. One time they were reading to him the pastime about when Krishna came and kidnapped Rukmini. And Prabhupada, it wasn't in the Krishna book, but Prabhupada threw the added detail in there that when Krishna, after he kidnapped her and put her on the chariot, and, you know, then he started getting attacked by all the Jarasandha and all the other friends of Sisupal. And Prabhupada gave the added detail that actually at that time Krishna gave Rukmini the reins to the chariot so he could turn around and fight with them all, you know. And he said she was a Kshatriya's daughter. She could do that like that. So, you know, Prabhupada relished the Krishna book here himself. And I don't know if it was personally an instruction, if it was an instruction from Prabhupada or just something that just came about. Most likely it was an instruction, but I can't remember seeing it in writing, but maybe Archie would. When I joined, every evening we had Krishna book and hot milk. What? And cookies, yeah, and prasadam, right. But it was not what? Yeah, it may have been not cookies, at least it was mahaprasadam. But that was a regular part of the ISKCON program, as much so as Mangal Arati, you know. I remember I joined in Brooklyn and on Henry Street, and it was a small building, and I could visualize it. You know, every evening, right after the Bhagavad Gita class, everybody would shoot upstairs to the room where they used to do the plays, and they'd bring up the hot milk and, you know, a tray of whatever Mahaprasadam was left at that point. And somebody would read Krishna book, and everybody would sit and listen, and, you know, like that. It was every night. Every night. That was the men and the women. It wasn't just the men. It wasn't just the women. It was, you know, it was like another temple activity. And we did that. And it was nice. It was quite a nice program. So, hot milk and Krishna book. Now it's just, you hear it's a memory. But, anyway, you could still do it. this is the good news, you know. Even if you don't have a group to do it, you can still do it individually. And even if you don't have hot milk, you can still read Krishna book. And even if you can't read for some reason, you could listen to Krishna book. I might have mentioned this in the last class I gave, but I recently downloaded. I didn't do it. Baruch did it for me. He downloaded all the from the website all the Krishna dictation tapes of Prabhupada onto what used to be an iPhone for me, and now it's stopped working as a phone, so I just use it as an iPod. And it's nectar. You can actually, because Prabhupada, that, you know, Prabhupada, most of the books Prabhupada dictated, and he, you know, into that dictaphone type, whatever it's called, the Grundig or whatever type of machine it was, and they transcribed it. And the Krishna book was done like that. Not so Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada actually typed that out, but Krishna book was done like that. So you could hear Prabhupada actually speaking the Krishna book, you know, and it's real nectar to hear, you know, in his own voice, Prabhupada speaking the Krishna book. So that's something that everybody could do. It's on a website called prabhupadvani.org. You just can find it quite pretty easily like that. So the opportunity is still there. But, you know, as Prabhupada says here, simply by reading these narrations as they're described in Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one gains salvation from this material world and gradually develops attachment to and devotion for Govinda, Adi Purush. So it's nice, you know, to be able to hear the pastimes of Krishna right from the lips, you know, from the mouth of the pure devotee of Krishna, who's brought this movement to us and, you know, has given us this. Let's see if there's anything else here. You know what, I could say more, but I'll stop there, 10 past, and I'll ask if there's any questions or comments. And if there are none, then I'll say more. But if there are some, I'll stop and respond to those. Any questions or comments? Yeah, Prabhu. You want to get a microphone there? And that might be a good idea, so the people on Cyberland or Internet can hear.
Bhikkhupati Prabhu, thank you for a good class. I just wanted to, also in this purport, Prabhupada does then come in his purports eventually to devotional service. And basically when reading Prabhupada's purports, correct me if I'm wrong, you do see that Prabhupada mentions a lot on devotional service.
Yeah.
So, like even in today's purport, after speaking about everything, he comes back to the point on devotional service. Devotional service, since Prabhupada mentioned so much in purports about devotional service, why is it that we see that we are aware of all this, we know that at the end we have to come to devotional service? When we also come to devotional service, we have so many reservations, you know. What do you think is causing, if you may elaborate, what is the main barriers that one doesn't come to what is called unconditional devotional service?
Well, we still have contamination within the heart, you know. I mean, we come to the material world because we're envious of Krishna, right? So that's, you know, we're still there to a certain degree. We're trying to recover from that. We're doing what we can, but we're not completely free from that contamination. So to the degree that we're still contaminated, our consciousness is still contaminated with the desire to compete with Krishna, usurp his position, etc. like that. To that degree, we're not going to be, attracted or able to fully surrender. But just by continuing to engage in the process, we get purified. So it's just, we have to be, that's why Rupa Goswami says you have to be utsahan nischaya daryat. You have to be enthusiastic, determined, patient. You just got to keep at it, and you know, as you continue to engage in devotional service, you become more and more purified. As you become more and more purified, we should be becoming more and more attracted to hear about Krishna, to engage in his service like that. And, gradually, eventually, everything comes to the proper point. So it's not something to be... Don't get freaked out, and we shouldn't get discouraged if we're finding that, it's not happening. Gotta be patient. Gotta be patient. It doesn't happen overnight. It's a process. You see, process means it happens over time. It's not an event. You know, that all of a sudden, you walk into the temple, you chant Hare Krishna once, and no, it doesn't work like that. You gotta work at it. We're in the showers, Prabhupada was said. We're in the process. So it will work, but we just have to, we have to work at it. Does that make sense? Is that okay answer? Yeah. Any other questions or comments? Okay. Guntaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.